Welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. Around 20 minutes each month of news, scandal and analysis you won't find anywhere else. With me, Naomi Fowler. The TaxCast is available to everyone on www.tackletaxhavens.com. It's also on the Tax Justice Network's website, www.taxjustice.net/TaxCast. You can subscribe to our RSS feed, to the Tax Justice Network's YouTube channel, email me on naomi@taxjustice.net, look for us on iTunes, or find us on a radio station near you. Coming up in this month's TaxCast special feature, you can steal from us, but from now on, we'll know who you are. Ukraine becomes the first country in the world to introduce a public registry of the real owners of companies. Denmark's just become the second. Meanwhile, the European Union, the OECD and the G20 are still talking about it. But first, here's a quick roundup of this month's Tax Justice news. Those are members of the European Parliament booing their European Union Commission President, Jean-Claude Juncker, as he tries to defend his conflict of interest as the former Prime Minister of the tax haven of Luxembourg. We'll talk about the latest tax haven leaks and revelations about Luxembourg later. Top stories from the US this month. US companies now have $2 trillion stashed offshore. That's a six-fold increase in 12 years. And a new study says seven of the biggest US companies paid their CEOs more than they paid in federal income taxes last year. And wounded US veterans and relatives of US soldiers killed in Iraq are suing five European banks. They argue the banks should compensate them for roadside bomb attacks and shootings because they allegedly processed Iranian money that funded the attacks. They accuse these banks of conspiring with Iranian banks to hide over $100 million worth of transactions in order to dodge US sanctions. The European Union says it wants to encourage sustainable and inclusive growth in Africa. So why is the taxpayer-funded European Investment Bank lending money to a company that's a heavy user of offshore finance centres? The investment fund, called Kala, is supposed to be an African success story. It turns out the company pays very little in tax, but it gives great returns for investors. The Tax Justice Network's George Turner got the scoop.
This story is an important one because the European Investment Bank liked to say that they were a kind of leader in formulating policies which would mean that investments weren't made in companies that were linked to tax havens. They accept that the secrecy of secrecy jurisdictions is damaging to international development. But what we found is that with one particular company, which is an African private equity fund, the European Investment Bank and several other development finance institutions from around Europe were investing hundreds of millions of euros into this company. And all of their investments seem to be controlled by funds and companies located in the British Virgin Islands, which on the face of it went against their stated policies and their stated objectives to clamp down on tax havens.
The European Union Parliament's to investigate the case. In the UK, two-thirds of all large businesses are apparently under tax investigation. It doesn't mean they're all on the fiddle, of course. But it's a shame the government has cut 43% of tax authority staff in just under a decade. In Switzerland, it seems many citizens would like to see the wealthy pay their taxes like everyone else. The Swiss are about to vote on whether to abolish the so-called millionaire tax, a nice little tax arrangement which would affect about 5,000 wealthy foreigners who are resident in Switzerland but don't actually work there. So Switzerland taxes them on their living and spending costs there and not on their vast incomes. We'll keep an eye on that one. It's looking quite close. Also in Switzerland this month, no, Swiss banking secrecy is not dead. The government there has signed up to an agreement paving the way towards the automatic exchange of financial account information in tax matters with other countries from 2018. Sounds great, doesn't it? But there's a catch. Of course there is. Switzerland's reserving the right to pick and choose which countries it's going to partially lift secrecy for and share information with. I'm guessing it won't be very many. And finally, in Iceland, prison for white-collar fraud, just as it should be. The former head of Icelandic bank, Landsbanki, has been sentenced to a one-year jail term. Meanwhile, prison cells elsewhere in the world are still empty of fraudulent bank CEOs and top management. And that's the Tax Justice News Roundup. Now we're going to talk to John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network for his take on this month. Okay, John, so we've had an amazing series of leaks, the latest ones released by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists on the state of some of the very juicy tax avoidance schemes being enjoyed by some of the world's biggest multinational corporations, some effective tax rates as low as 0.25% in the lovely secrecy jurisdiction of Luxembourg. Don't want to be saying we told you so, but the Tax Justice Network's been saying for a long time that the appointment to the European Commission of the former Prime Minister of Luxembourg, Jean-Claude Juncker, was a big mistake, would be a disaster. Now we're looking at the Financial Times, Bloomberg, calling for him to resign. Is he going to go?
Everybody in the global tax industry has known for a long, long time that Luxembourg has been engaged in these sweetheart deals with international companies. This goes back decades. It's extraordinary that it's only come out now. And the most extraordinary part about it is that everybody within the European political apparatus has known that Jean-Claude Juncker, the former prime minister, was right at the heart of designing the whole policy framework within which Luxembourg transformed itself into a tax haven, and yet they made him the president of the commission. And that's the most extraordinary and corrupting part of it. What's happened, and someone's described Luxembourg as this magic fairyland where, in this case, we're talking about PricewaterhouseCoopers, could go to Luxembourg, talk to the senior officials, and do a deal, a shocking deal where they could shift their profits into Luxembourg and pretend that's where the profits were being made. It's classic tax haven stuff. And yet Juncker, even now, is pretending that he didn't know anything about it. And that's why I think the Financial Times is right to say that Juncker should not be part of any commission investigation into the use of Luxembourg as a centre for profit shifting and as a place where companies could engage in anti-competitive tax planning or tax avoidance. Juncker should either resign from the presidency or he should recuse himself, in other words, stand back and say, I've got conflicts of interest, I should be no part of this current European Commission inquiry into Luxembourg's role as a centre for tax abuse. It's very, very damaging to the European Commission because, needless to say, all this story does is to promote this idea that there are senior politicians right at the heart of the European Commission who are busy protecting the interests of their countries, even when their countries are engaged in abusive practices, which is the case of Luxembourg.
And they really rather walked into that as well, didn't they? It's not as though people didn't know that there were EU Commission investigations pending into tax affairs of various different countries. It's almost like delivering to the European sceptics on a plate the whole European Union project.
Yeah, I mean, what happened here is that the European Union, or rather the senior politicians who appointed him as president, took a gigantic shotgun, carefully loaded, and shot themselves in the foot with both barrels, because this was just such an egregious appointment from the word go. Much as I think that PricewaterhouseCoopers should take a massive reputational hit because they were doing these deals, they weren't the only people who were doing these deals. Other major global accounting firms have done exactly the same deal on behalf of their clients. Because it was well known that Luxembourg, their senior tax person, would just sign off on these things automatically. He's retired now, but I'm sure there are plenty of other tax officials in Luxembourg and other tax havens who are signing off automatically on similar deals.
Right, and there's going to be a vote in the European Parliament now and a debate on removing Juncker and, in fact, the entire EU Commission. I don't expect that to go very far, but it's still interesting that it's creating so many waves, which, you know, was not impossible to predict, was it? So the G20 have met this month in Australia. Is there anything that we can say that's positive that's come out of this meeting in terms of tax reform?
Oh, I really struggle to find any enthusiasm for the G20. It really doesn't seem to be an organisation which can get to grips with it. The OECD has been trying to spin a story around how one part of their base erosion profit shifting programme, they're now engaging with more developing countries. And I suppose that's something we should try to find some kind of enthusiasm for, but I can't, partly because they seem to be very careful about selecting which countries they'll involve. And, you know, Jamaica, Peru, Philippines, Senegal, Tunisia, we need more countries, more developing countries at the table. And I don't think we're seeing much advance here, because the OECD thus far has refused to really pay attention to the needs of developing countries. And what we really need from a world tax organisation which has legitimacy is a complete reform.
You have to ask, whose agenda are they inviting some of these countries to discuss? Because it doesn't appear to be the agenda of some of the developing countries.
Yep, I think the whole process would be much more honest if we said, well, let's go back to square one. Let's find out from the developing countries, and preferably the United Nations that does it, what do developing countries need and how can we move towards achieving that?
So G20 in Brisbane, got a suntan, not much else.
Not much else, but I think we can look forward to seeing further progress on the development of automatic information exchange protocols, and the move towards public ownership disclosure regimes where there is a requirement for ultimate beneficial owners, in other words, the warm-blooded people who actually own these companies, offshore companies, to disclose their identity on public registry. And here we're seeing a lot of kickback, not least from major tax haven countries like Britain, where you have politicians saying that they're trying to restrict the disclosure so it isn't made public. Only tax authorities and national agencies would have access to the registry information. That's just not good enough. And time and again, when we look at who's pushing for this kind of limitation on disclosure, we discover it's people with conflicts of interest. So the old age-old political corruption is creeping in here, trying to restrict the disclosure, and that's not good enough.
Okay. And last month in the TaxCast, we talked about Tax Justice Network Africa making history by taking the Kenyan government to court in an unprecedented case over a treaty with the tax haven of Mauritius. Now we've got more good news from Kenya. The Kenyan government's now considering withdrawing tax exemptions granted to foreign investors. I mean, they've got a long history of giving things like 10-year tax holidays on corporate profits and VAT exemptions and all sorts of exemptions to foreign companies and investors. So this is a really good news that they're rethinking this.
Yeah, hooray. Fantastic news. And Tax Justice Network Africa has been a key player here in pushing for this. So take a bow, all of our African colleagues. But it's not just our African colleagues, it's also very senior officials in the Kenyan Investment Authority who are saying, look, all of these tax exemptions, which cost something in the region of 100 billion Kenyan shillings, that's 1.1 billion US dollars, every year, which is a heck of a big hit. These tax incentives, so-called, basically they're tax giveaways, they're subsidies, serve no useful purpose whatsoever. And that's an important thing to recognise. African authorities are saying they serve no useful purpose. Essentially, it's money for gone. It's a tax expenditure, which is harming Africa to the extent that, you know, they're getting very little benefit from the foreign direct investment that they're attracting. And they're now saying that these tax holidays should be withdrawn.
Right, and maybe some countries in the developed world might want to pay attention to this too, because we heard in the TaxCast last month about direct corporate welfare and how much that's costing the UK, for example.
Yeah, well, if there are any politicians in the UK listening in on this, or politicians in France, Germany and elsewhere, it's time that they wised up, and it's good that African politicians are taking the lead here. It's not just Tax Justice Network that's saying these exemptions serve no useful purpose. The International Monetary Fund has been saying this for some time. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development has been saying for some time that these serve no useful economic purpose. In fact, they simply create distortions. And it's time for politicians right the way across the developed world to recognise that when they talk the language of tax competition, from an economist's point of view, they're talking an illiterate language. They're actually engaging in tax wars. So European politicians and UK politicians are rushing headlong towards the bottom in their so-called tax competition policies.
Thanks, John. John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. As we're always saying on the TaxCast, financial secrecy is the friend of the corrupt, those wanting to launder money and those facilitating it. That's why we need to get the real owners of companies and trusts out into the open with a public register. But some nations aren't too keen on the idea. Funnily enough, they tend to be the ones benefiting the most from secrecy. Now, Ukraine has led the way and become the first country in the world to implement a public register. This month, the TaxCast looks at what it means for Ukraine and for the rest of the world. There's a real urgency in Ukraine to seize this moment in history and push through strong reforms. This is a press conference with their thieving President Yanukovych before he was ousted. This journalist's asking him about his obscene luxury lifestyle. Why are you so rich, he's asking him, when the rest of the country's suffering? Yanukovych is telling him, what you're so enthusiastically trying to imply, I couldn't care less. I don't envy you. We understand each other very well. Whenever the former Ukrainian president was asked about the real owners behind huge Ukrainian companies and about the ownership of the famous presidential palace, his reply was always to tell journalists to go away and prove it. And as he well knew, proving ownership would be pretty much impossible. But after he fled Ukraine for Russia, it became a different story and all sorts of documents started to surface. It turned out that the palace compound was one-third owned by an anonymous UK shell company and two-thirds owned by an Austrian bank. A classic asset-hiding dodge. If the UK had had a register of beneficial owners in place, those nominees behind the UK company would have had to reveal who the true owners were. The Ukrainian president's palace got a lot of attention in the world's media. But that was the tip of a very big iceberg.
My name is Daria Kalinyuk. I am Executive Director of Anti-Corruption Action Centre. It's a Ukrainian NGO, and we are one of the NGOs who advocated for this law, the law which establishes public registry of beneficial owners. Right after the revolution in Ukraine and right after the government was changed, we started to work on the reforms on behalf of civil society, as civil society, opening up as much data as possible. Yanukovych and his associates, they laundered billions from state budget using shell corporations, nominal directors, both in Ukraine and abroad.
Right, and I think 70 billion at least went out just in a period of 3 years through offshore vehicles and structures. There was something like $500,000 left in the state coffers at the time when Yanukovych was ousted.
Yes, the state budget was absolutely empty. And the leadership of the country in Ukraine, they were not only depriving people from tax-paid budget, but they were actually violating human rights, even murdering people. The problem in Ukraine is that law enforcement agencies, it's been used for years to cover corruption cases and to represent the interests of those in power. And because of that, you feel impunity in power. And there is still a high risk that in Ukraine, another Yanukovych will return to Ukraine. It will be another last name, but it will be the same Yanukovych who consolidates the power. So the leadership changed, but the system didn't.
And nowhere is the abuse of power to the detriment of the people better demonstrated than in Ukraine's healthcare system. It shows just how Ukraine's politicians have used and are still using anonymous ownership to hide their conflicts of interest and bid for public contracts for the purchasing and distribution of drugs and medical equipment. They bulk buy, and then they artificially inflate the prices, causing tragedy and suffering for their own population. These are parents pleading with government officials and politicians to stop. It's immoral. It's murderous. Don't earn money from our grief and trouble, this parent saying. Help my son win the battle for his life. This mother's son has renal failure. If my son doesn't have dialysis, she says, he could die. I'm begging you not to make money out of Ukrainian patients at such a difficult time for us. Daria Kalenyuk again of the Anti-Corruption Action Centre.
In providing medications in Ukraine, most of the medications from abroad go through the scheme of transfer pricing, through intermediary companies, shell companies in Cyprus. The price for the product goes up and the actual profit is left there in Cyprus. And then the very expensive of poor quality medication goes into Ukraine, and then shell companies under control of the same person are bidding and receive state contracts. All that is kind of work of organized criminal groups with very close linkages to the ministries, to the MPs. The Cyprus, by the way, is the largest investor to Ukraine.
Very interesting.
In Ukraine, we have state medication, state healthcare system, and some of the medications, like for HIV/AIDS, for tuberculosis, for hepatitis, for oncology, they are procured by government. They have to be procured by government. Even HIV/AIDS drugs, people cannot procure themselves. They are not on the open market. It has to be provided by the state. Technically, medications go from India to Ukraine, but on the paper trail, it goes from India to Cyprus, then to another Cyprus, and then to Ukraine.
And this is all in the interests of people who are inflating the prices, yes, hiding behind anonymous structures.
Exactly.
And endangering people's health.
Exactly. It's really higher than market price. State pays for the medications, but it also poor quality. If you pay high price, you expect good quality. But very often, it's very, very, very poor quality medications are sold out. Another result of the corruption is that they are not delivered on time. So there could be 3 to 6 months delay. The patients are waiting for the medications, and it could cause real deaths of people.
And that's still happening now.
It is still there. And most of the corrupt systems, corrupt schemes in Ukraine are still in place. And the reason for that is that in the middle-level management of the government, they are still the same people who used to represent the interest of certain business groups. And each sector in Ukraine is controlled by a very limited group of people which know the market, which know the scheme, which know how to produce documents to make the schemes as legal as possible. So I believe that the beneficial ownership law will be one of the tools to approach all schemes in all the ministries and all the sectors. It will be a really long and hard fight, but we have to win it because we paid too high a price.
So all companies previously registered in Ukraine have until June 2015 to disclose their ultimate beneficiaries in a public register. And new companies won't be able to register without giving that information. No more nominee directors. No more hidden conflicts of interest.
But the question is, what to do with those who will not comply?
So enforcement.
Yeah, enforcement. Once we will identify those who will not comply, it's possible for journalists to focus on these companies, to see in which areas they are operating. And our next step would be just forbidding for all these companies participation in any public bidding, public contracts, and getting any credits, loans, support from the state. In Ukraine, we don't have trusts as they are here in the UK or in other Anglo-American system of law. But we think that public register of beneficial owner will help companies which are good, which are real investors, to be privileged on the market against those who are interested in hiding their beneficial owner or in doing some sort of fraud.
How do Ukrainians feel, or how do you feel about the fact that so much of this money ended up in places like the City of London? You mentioned Cyprus already as a big beneficiary of the theft that has been going on in Ukraine.
We see that when Europe wants us to change and asks that we have to change, Europe has to change itself as well. It's not enough only to change Ukraine. If they want to prevent corrupt capital to flow into the EU, they can do this. And there are regulations, anti-money laundering directives, FATF standards, which are just not implemented well in the EU. And we have a feeling Europe, is not willing to implement them well.
Why do you think this is?
Because it's profitable to get this cash, and it looks like for the benefit of the developed countries to receive proceeds of corruption. So they seem not to be corrupt themselves, and I think it's not right. We are surprised a bit that in the EU there is no will to pass for the public register of beneficial ownerships. And we were hoping that after the passage of the fourth EU anti-money laundering directive in February, every country of the EU will have the same public registry, including trusts. But it appeared to be that Germany, the Netherlands, and Sweden, they are opposing the public registry. And we cannot understand these logics. We can't understand why these countries don't want to create a very powerful anti-corruption tool, especially considering that we have this recent example where these jurisdictions were used to launder billions of money from the developing country in Ukraine.
We've got the G20 meeting supposed to be talking about trying to support really some of the work that you're doing, and the talking about beneficial ownership registries is very much around at the moment excluding trusts and foundations.
No way. Please don't do this. Excluding trusts will mean that all money will flow to trusts. And in Ukrainian realities, it means that the companies will be registered from BVI to Liechtenstein or UK trust. And in Ukrainian register, they will report to these trustees, these lawyers, as a beneficial owner. They will lie, but it will take us really, we'll have to do lots of job to reveal that it was lie, to make these companies accountable, to hold them responsible for their lie. So I think it's not fair to leave out the space for trusts.
No one wants to see another Yanukovych telling journalists to go away and prove he's corrupt, knowing that they almost certainly can't. The G20 nations, the EU and the OECD need to follow Ukraine's lead, support their anti-corruption efforts, and implement a cross-border public register of companies, trusts and foundations. You can find out more about the other transparency laws the Anti-Corruption Action Centre's working on at www.antacantac.org.ua. There's an English version of the site you can click on. You've been listening to The Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. and we'll be back next month.